Welcome to Sustainability Steps, where we dive deep into important discussions regarding global sustainability. We are your hosts,
Bhardwaj.
Ishana Kula.
and Shrey Agarwal. Tune in every month where we'll be joined by experts engaging in discussions about worldwide issues, sustainability efforts and solutions, and inspiring initiatives aimed at creating a more sustainable future for our planet and the people on it. Whether you're deeply passionate about sustainability or just starting to explore how you can make a difference for our planet, our podcast is here for you. We dive into engaging conversations and offer practical tips to help you along your journey towards a greener, more sustainable lifestyle. Enjoy. Today, we are joined by Vinita Gongwal.
Hey everybody. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming. So to start off, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you grew up and what it was like growing up in that area?
Sure. So currently I'm a resident of Melbourne, the same town as all of you, and I'm a mother of two teenage boys. I have a bachelor's degree in public policy and dual master's degrees in international relations and taxation. I have a CPA license, and my current profession is I'm a partner with KPMG's financial services tax practice based in New York. I live here now, but I actually was born and raised in India. And growing up in India during 1980s, India was very much an underdeveloped and developing economy at the time. And sustainability was really just a natural way of life. A necessity in a society where every material object had infinite value in life. So everything could be reused, repurposed, repaired, and in the end, sold for scrap value. Believe it or not, we literally had people come to our house and buy all the scrap newspapers, for real cash. So I grew up in that environment in 1980s India, but I moved here for my college education in 1995. And when I arrived here, I was exposed to a very different way of life in the US, which was very focused on consumerism as sort of a symbol of economic growth and development, and a lifestyle that relied on everyday conveniences of use and throwaway culture, from everything from coffee cups to fast fashion, right? So that was sort of a contrast between where I grew up and where I came in as a young adult, ready to start my college life.
So you briefly talked about why you were involved into sustainability. So I just wanted to dive deeper into that. So I want to ask specifically, what exactly inspired you to promote sustainability when you came to America?
So as I came into the US, as a 18-year-old starting my college, and as I said, the culture here was a lot focused on conveniences and use and throw. Everything from coffee cups to fast fashion, I also realized that, people were just constantly upgrading things from kitchen appliances to smartphones to cars to even homes. It's not like you live in the same house for your entire life or generations. People routinely moved from two to three houses in a lifetime. And one other surprising thing I found was that a lot of times, products just built here came with some kind of obsolescence built into them, such that it was easier to repair things than to it was never easier to repair things. It was always cheaper to just buy something new. And coming from that relative scarcity in India to now the society with this feeling of abundance was, to be very honest, very attractive initially, and I went through my own journey of partaking in the American way of life, enthusiastically participating in Black Friday sales and constantly looking for slick deals to accumulate more and more material items. So my first 10 years in the US were really, I was pretty not aware or questioning anything about my way of life here. I was pretty happy about the material possessions I had and the financial security of having a corporate job. I was going about my life living in a suburban community, paying my taxes, raising two young kids, and a thought never crossed my mind if my lifestyle was in any way not consistent with my, spiritual beliefs, or if in any way contributing to global warming or climate change. But it changed one day, I believe it was in 2010, And I came across a news story on the impact of plastic pollution on marine life. You know, basically, there were pictures of whales washing ashore with 80 pounds of plastic in their stomach, and pictures of tortoise and other marine animals with straws and other, the fishing nets strung through their nostrils and their bodies. And these images were quite, shocking, and they led me to look into the issue of plastic pollution a little bit more closely. And as I dug deeper into it and studied more, it just became clear to me that, well, the problem was just not plastic. The use and throwaway culture that we are used to here, it was leading to a pervasive waste problem, which was directly linked to climate change. And that really just got me on my journey, on my personal journey to examine my everyday choices and the waste in my daily life and life cycle of different products we consumed as a family and where they ended up. You know, for instance, I started learning about, I was diligently, religiously recycling plastic. But then again, the more I learned, there was never more than 9% of plastic ever got recycled. And, so it just got me thinking more and more. Every time I learned more, it was just eye-opening. And it led me to completely swear off of plastic water bottles and switch to biodegradable options. You know, things like Story of Stuff. I don't know if you guys have watched those short movies, but they were eye-opening, and really understanding how needs and wants have been created in this society, which is, the whole mantra is that economic growth means more production and more consumption. And that's why if you want to go by those ethos, then you want to constantly create demand for things, right? You know, manufactured celebrations from Mother's Day, Father's Day to Valentine's Day to Halloween, and everything had its own, everything was driven by, okay, go buy more things, create, new decorations for every event and just use and throw, use and throw, use and throw. Once I started learning about it, I think, because that sustainability ethos were really built into me from my upbringing as well as my education. I was studying public policy. I was always driven to be in the public sector, although I ended up going into private sector, choosing tax as my profession because it is ultimately public policy. So I had those sort of, fundamental, I guess my value system was not aligned with what I was discovering. And I kept on going. And the more I learned, for instance, now I started thinking about, all right, the waste we are throwing, what about the organic food waste? Why aren't we composting? I started composting in my backyard. And once I started doing that, I learned about birds and bees and butterflies and how the pollinators were at risk and how the green lawn that I was so proud of was completely antithetical to supporting biodiversity in life. So you start learning about native plants and converted part of my yards to native gardens. You know, all of this, it was just like, it just made so clear to me that, the lifestyle that we were living here was completely not consistent with what we think of as an abundant and prosperous life over a long term, over a longer period of time. It was completely unsustainable, completely antithetical to sustainable development of life on this earth. And that was really the prompt for me to, it became a personal passion in a way because I was raising two young kids and I, sustainability is defined by the UN as, meeting the needs of your present times while not compromising the needs of your future generations. So mother of two children, it really made me personally extremely distressed that, my current lifestyle, I'm literally looting the future of from my children and my children's generation. So it be made me very aware. But what also happened was I was just not happy doing what I was doing in my personal life. You know, I started changing everything in my home, but that wasn't enough because with my public policy and tax background, I truly understood the power of, if you want to make big ticket change, it has to come from public policy. And taxes have always been a very important tool for a society to drive right policy action and right public behaviors, right? For instance, if you guys must have read about, the cigarettes in this country, at one point, a large population in this country smoked cigarettes, and then they implemented this huge tax on cigarettes that had a huge role that it played in reducing how many people smoke cigarettes in America, besides a lot of, you know, social awareness campaigns about its health detriments. But tax play an important role, and public policy plays an important role. So I found a perfect opportunity when I moved into Melbourne. So we were living in Parsippany when I first realized about all these issues. But at that time, I was really just focused on my personal life, my friends and family, and you know, I was trying to make change in my small circle of influence. When I moved to Melbourne, the first community I joined was the Green Team. And I became a very active member immediately. And in 2018, we were trying to get a plastic ordinance passed in town to ban straws and plastic bags. So I set up a table along with my two kids, who were elementary school kids at that time, in Melbourne Library during winter break. And we educated people. We got pledges to support that ordinance. I organized a Earth Day poster competition for Melbourne elementary school kids. And it was very well subscribed to. A lot of kids participated, created beautiful posters. I was quite excited. I was really feeling like, wow, okay, this is something that I personally feel passionate about. And if I create more awareness, and just like I was not aware, and I didn't care, but once I learned, I started caring. In my simple mind, it was simply about this. People just don't know. They need to be made aware. And if they are made aware, they're going to make the right choices. So I went with the thought process that, you know what, we need to create this awareness. We need to create this grassroots movement in Melbourne to make people more informed and aware. But our Green Team was quite, as active as Renee and Ellen, who were the drivers of a Green Team. You know, they personally lived very green lives and did a lot in town, but they were quite not enthusiastic about the support in town. They felt like Melbourne was not really a town where people cared about sustainability much, and it's really a fringe movement. And we do what we can, but we can't really expect wholesale changes here. I wasn't happy to hear that, but you know, we continued on doing our own little things. But then I met Radhika Iyengar, who was another resident in town and worked for Columbia University's Earth Institute, and was running a program for students called Eco Ambassadors. And my kids were not part of it yet, but you know, I talked to her, and we realized that both of her were really had a lot in common in terms of her thought process and what we wanted to accomplish. And we started talking about different ideas of how can we get more people to care. You know, why are people still using plastic spoons in their parties? Why are we throwing away so many plastic cutlery and plastic water bottles? If only people knew, they would not do it. You know, that's what we thought. And with that thought process, to coincide with the 2019 Greta Thunberg Climate Week, New York, she came to New York City for Climate Week in 2019. We wanted to do our own march in Melbourne, really to protest against plastic waste and other climate change issues and sustainability issues. We didn't get a permit to do a march, so I rented Bor Center, and we pretty much, you know, very, very last minute, we organized this town hall and spread the word in the community through word of mouth. A lot of eco ambassadors, young eco ambassadors, I believe, including Ishan Bhardwaj. You were there, right? You know, a lot of students came, a lot of parents came, and we had over 50 people who came, talked passionately about how they would like to see some action against plastic waste. And this was just an eye-opener and a very, very exciting and encouraging experience for both Radhika and me. So that group, that town hall event, it sort of morphed into a WhatsApp chatting group called Melbourne Climate Action, and it became a way of creating awareness in the township about personal sustainability, but at the same time really focused on what can we all do together for our township and advance sustainable policy changes. So for instance, a composting food pilot programs was introduced because a lot of people now were demanding it, right? So this was really my journey from starting in my own personal life, really learning about the impact of my personal actions on these global existential threats we are facing of climate change and biodiversity loss, and really knowing that I am contributing to the problem, but I have the means to be the part of the solution, and really creating awareness about it and making people aware that if we come together and push for right policy changes, then we can make change happen, right? So that was a journey. But I'll just, you know, add in two more things that because this had become such a passionate pursuit for me, you know, I wanted to do more than the local level. So I joined the board of Nature Conservancy, which is the world's largest conservation organization with a presence in 77 countries, all 50 states in the U.S. And I joined the board in New Jersey and became a trustee. So I've been a trustee for 6 years, and as part of my role at the Nature Conservancy, I not just do fundraising for, you know, the various efforts that it drives, but we also do advocacy day, you know. So basically, a lot of us trustees, we go to Washington, D.C. once every year, and we talk to our elected representatives, senators and representatives from New Jersey, and press them to put their support towards all the conservation bills in front of the Congress. So for instance, last year we went and we talked to them about RAWA, which is, you know, Restoring America's Wildlife, you know, Act. And so we basically go, and when trustees from around the country come and talk to their representatives, they know that their votes are on stake. You know, they have public support for doing something right for conservation, and they're going to put their support behind it. I know one of you guys was at the local Milburn Township Committee meeting recently, and it's a similar, it's a parallel there, right? That as a community, Milburn Climate Action is asking for native plants in Milburn, that we should support more native plants. Then as a community, we also showed up to a township committee meeting recently when the township committee was debating on passing a native plant resolution or not. And when they saw that several residents came in support, it just gave them political cover and a reason to put their support behind that native plant resolution, right? So I guess I'm trying to connect the dots for you guys that my day-to-day job, my profession is, I'm a tax professional for KPMG. My job has no overlap with my pursuit in this climate space, but I believe that it doesn't have to, because sustainable living and climate change and global warming are existential threats that we all have to deal with. So no matter what you do, what your profession is, what your age is, what your gender is, what your, you know, demographic is, which country you live in, it is going to affect us all. And it is unfortunately going to affect the people who are least contributing to it the most, because they just don't have the means to deal with it, right? So do what we can in every sphere of our life, you know, through nonprofit organizations, through community organizations, through and your workplace too. So even though at work I'm a tax partner, I've taken on the role of Living Green Partner Champion for our Short Hills office. So again, in that role, I get to talk to my KPMG colleagues about the same things I talk to my Melbourne Climate Action Group about. I brought KPMG volunteers to clear out, you know, some invasive plants and build trails in South Mountain Conservancy a few weeks back as part of KPMG Community Impact Day, right? So again, one of the most important things I feel I do or I can do is to not leave any opportunity to change one mind, to create more awareness, to stir up the conversation about whether it's plastic pollution, native plants, composting, waste, energy, whatever it may be. But, you know, I try to change minds every opportunity I get. So sorry, that was a very long answer to your question.
That was a lot, but I think we all completely agree. What you're doing is really important, and I think we need to start doing change right now before it's too late. And we need to start creating awareness in our communities so that people can also join us. You started talking about how some people came into the township committee meeting, and a lot of these other different things where, for example, your profession has nothing to do with sustainability, yet you're still a big part of it and you still really believe in promoting and pushing sustainability in our community. So now focusing more on a youth level and what youth can do. So what message do you have for the youth in younger generations to not only lead an environmentally friendly life, but also keep in mind all the sustainable development goals and how they can be more sustainable in their daily lives, in school, and at home?
Yeah, so I think, knowing all of you from your association, the Melbourne Climate Action, as well as Eco Ambassador Program, I know personally how committed all of you are. And I think you are probably more aware than I was at your age about being more mindful about the choices you make and what is sustainable versus not. But one thing that I'd say to all of you, and which is what our hope was when I started last year the Melbourne Climate Action student chapter, was to really not to say so much to you that, guys, you need to be, this is your future and you need to take responsibility and do something about it, but to actually encourage you to say, hey, guys, this is not a problem of your making. This is a problem that your parents' generation and frankly, your grandparents' generation, I think those are the two generations that have gone on this, this notion of, relentless consumption and production and, just economic growth, which is measured by GDP and, production and consumption again, and all the waste that comes along with it, with really no cost associated with, the environmental degradation that all that economic production is causing, right? So I think what I would encourage you guys to do is that don't just do what you're doing in your own personal sphere. Demand more from your parents' generation, from your teachers, from your schools, from your communities, from your elected officials, because you really should. We are literally every time we are taking more resources away from you, we're leaving less behind for your generation, right? So why shouldn't you ask for it? This is your right, right? So for example, I'll give you an example. We have been trying very hard to, we passed the plastic ordinance. It was something. We did plastic bags and plastic straws. But guess what happened? Those thin plastic bags have now been replaced by very thick polypropylene bags, which are being sold at ShopRite and other places, 5 bags for $4. And they are very thick, meant to be reused, but because they are so cheap, people conveniently forget about them. And every time they go to ShopRite, they just buy more bags. And now we have a crisis related to those thicker polypropylene bags, and they are not recyclable. They just get burnt. That's the, or they will end up rotting in landfills for 1,000 years, right? So why is that happening? Why are Melbourne cafeteria, school cafeteria, is still selling plastic water bottles when there's research out there that every plastic water bottle has, and maybe Ishan Bhardwaj, you can correct me on the math, but I think it's hundreds of thousands of microplastic particles in it, right? So it's a health care, it's a health issue for children. It's an environmental issue for our planet. Why are the schools still selling it when we have water fountains everywhere? Why aren't we switching plastic cutlery to biodegradable cutlery? Why isn't the school offering more vegan and vegetarian choices when we know that our agriculture system and our food is one of the biggest contributors to GHG emissions and global warming, right? And then we know that vegan and vegetarian foods also have health benefits for students. So there are so many low-hanging fruits. And you would just scratch your head and say, why aren't we doing it? And just also, many other countries are doing it. You go and look at what children eat and how children eat in France, in school, you'll be shocked. You go and see South Korea has been composting. It's mandatory composting for the entire country, I believe. You just do it. There's no question asked. Why is US so behind? Why is When we try to pass a ban on straws, why is it politicized and made into a my personal rights or my individual freedom issue? Your rights stop where mine begin. Your rights come with responsibilities. So I would really like to see all of you in your final 2 years in school take some action, leave a legacy. Start a petition, and this is something we want to do at Oktoberfest. Draft a petition to ban plastic water bottles in school or any school event, and plastic cutlery and plastic plates. They are very reasonable biodegradable options available every year. So that can be one simple thing. The other thing that some of us parents, we actually presented at your board of ed meeting a few months back, and we put forth a sort of a 4-point agenda. And one of them was focused on this plastic waste and school cafeteria and other things. One was focused on really utilizing the opportunity with New Jersey's mandate on integrating climate change education into our curriculum and really encouraging your school to make more practical programs out of it, right? Then the third was focused on energy. That we really need to do an energy audit. Why don't our schools have solar panels on it? I mean, Livingston does, right? We are so proud of our school system. We are number one in so many things. But very frankly, in sustainability and climate action, we're nowhere. And the fourth topic, which I'm most passionate about and I presented on, was to ask for a native pollinator garden in every school. That we should really think about a plan. And other than your sports fields, every other lawn area should really be converted to native gardens. And that can be tied into a hands-on experiential learning program for different levels of students who can participate in building that native plant garden and learn about soil health and soil biochemistry and runoffs and impact to water. An impact to pollinator life. It is such a fantastic project to teach students the importance of these little things that we take for granted. Pollinators and native plants, they make a world go round. They are responsible for the food supply, right? So what I'm saying here is what I would recommend to all of you is that you should be not be angry, but you should really be demanding more from your parent generation and your teachers and schools to do more because this is not enough. 19 out of the last 20 years have been the hottest years on this earth. You hear about $1 billion-plus climate disasters, natural disasters happening all around the world. The flooding going on in Bangladesh right now. There was flooding in Pakistan last year. There have been extremely hot days everywhere. So it doesn't matter where you live. You can't build walls around you. We had wildfire, fires in Canada caused air quality issues in our town last year, right? So you can't really, nobody's immune to this. We all have to face, we all will have to face consequences. We already are. We already are. So why wouldn't you demand action now? So that's my, if there's a parting thought, it is really this, that there is really no time to lose. And I don't want to say this as sounding alarm bells or making you guys feel that it's too late already. It's not, because every challenge is an opportunity to do something different. But we really need to do two things. One is we need to depoliticize climate change. Climate change work should not be a political issue in this country. Sustainable development goals should be the most beautiful thing. Right? Because what's better than having development which is sustainable means you can have it forever. So be more vocal. Don't just do what you're doing in your own little homes or in the same sort of I guess what's that echo chamber, We keep on talking to each other, this small group of Melbourne Climate Action volunteers, 100 people plus strong. But how do we reach others? Right? How many students are there in your class? How many other students care like you do? And why don't they? Why shouldn't they? So that's my message to the youth, that you need to be demanding more action here and now.
I completely agree with that. And for our last question, just really quickly, Do you have any actionable steps that students can take? Something just like really simple, maybe two or three things that they can just do to be more sustainable in their day-to-day lives?
Yeah, I think, we did a few things which are again sort of tied into what our town and our, young generation as well as others are most impacted by or are impacting. So fashion is one. So I believe one of you participated in our, sustainable fashion show earlier this year. We will be doing some kind of social media post on it shortly. But again, this is a huge area. Fast fashion in itself is a big problem and driver of climate change and leading to waste problem and pollution of air, water, and soil. So that's an area where if you can all be advocates of sustainable fashion choices, be it your clothes or your shoes or the accessories that you use, that's one. But I think another thing that students can really drive is, think about your gadgets. There's a whole separate area of e-waste issues now, right? Because we're constantly changing our phones and our iPads and our laptops. And again, the planned obsolescence built into these things and the cheap deals we get every Thanksgiving, it just drives all of us to buy things which we don't need. So think about that if you can change, how would you make it cool for your generation to not really go after the latest and greatest iPhone model? And the third thing I'd say is that, really think about climate change and biodiversity loss and the waste pollution, which I think, waste problem, which are the three crises we are facing, as very interconnected. And really start employing these, we start building these habits, right? That you carry your own water bottle, which I think you guys do. But I think again, I'll connect it back to, it's not enough that it's that you are doing it. Use every opportunity to talk about it with others. If you're carrying that water bottle, make it a conversation starter. Right? Build your community of people who think like you and care just like you.
I think that's really important, and we should definitely start doing that, because it's not enough for just us, the people who are already part of these groups of sustainability and climate action, but we have to spread it to those who maybe don't know about it or aren't aware of these things. But unfortunately, that's all the time we have today. Thank you so much for joining us. And we all thought it was really, really helpful, and I hope the people listening as well take something away and start implementing it in their daily lives as well. Yeah, do you have any final remarks to say?
I think you guys are still almost 2 years away from voting age, but I'll just say one last thing. I can't stress enough being having this public policy background, how important it is in a democracy for all of us to be participating in the public policy and policy making and political process. We cannot stay on the fringes and say it's somebody else's problem because it's not. It is everybody's issue. So we have to be engaged, we have to be involved, and we have to make ourselves aware of, so whatever level you want to be involved in your school's governing body, in your towns, you can be part of the Environmental Commission student chapter, or a student liaison role that we have. You can be part of other voluntary organizations, but, be involved and speak up. That really is my final word to you, that you guys all do so much work, but you really need to be more vocal about the good work you're doing and inspire others.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
All right. No, I really appreciate the opportunity. This is fantastic. I've listened to your other podcasts. Really, really good work, and keep at it.
Thank
Thank you.
you.
Thank you.
Take care, all.
Bye.